This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. In the last week, we have seen a state-announced takeover of Houston's public schools, of course, an international criminal court arrest warrant accusing Vladimir Putin of war crimes. Washington has responded to a pair of failed banks, which in turn led to a major Swiss bank takeover and merger. There have been presidential endorsements, a conservative activist kicked out of a Texas legislative hearing, and even a softball moment of the cast of Ted Lasso appearing at the White House was disrupted by an unruly reporter, earning the ire of the rest of the White House press corps. Oh, and former U.S. Senator Al Franken is hosting The Daily Show this week. And yet, it's what did not happen yesterday that has the political world's attention today. To discuss it all, we are joined now in this week's Political Roundup by Party Politics co-host and professor of political science, Brandon Roddinghouse, and his fellow University of Houston political analyst and lecturer, Nancy Sims. Brandon, Nancy, good morning.
Good morning, Craig.
Morning.
Okay, we have a lot to discuss. We're going to extend the conversation a little bit to try and cover as much of it as we can. And stop me if you've heard this one before. Former President Trump says something's going to happen on a certain day. The political world breathlessly anticipates it. The day comes, it does not happen. Will cable news outlets and the social media world ever conclude that maybe former President Trump is Lucy and their Charlie Brown preparing to kick the football?
He's like the president who cried wolf.
He really is.
But he is definitely one who knows how to get free media. And that is the reason why, frankly, he was president and may possibly be the nominee and president again. So the fact that, you know, he had bragged about being a person who could shoot somebody in Central Park and or
in Fifth Avenue.
I think
it matters which street you're on, apparently.
Apparently. And not lose votes is a pretty telling testament to the fact that, you know, he is Teflon Don. The scandals don't hit him like they used to.
And I guess he is demonstrating an example of someone who, you know, is perfectly content with expressing, they're going to arrest me, something that the rest of us probably would not want to shout from the rooftops.
He's proud
of it. He's fine with it.
No, he's proud of it. There was no indication that the DA was going to issue the indictments or anything on Tuesday. He just made that up. He made it up and he announced it. And then he seems proud of the fact that he's going to be arrested.
Yeah, I want to get to why that may be the case beyond just the personality of the individual. Trump was not, as he suggested would happen, arrested in New York Tuesday. He could be indicted most any time in New York over a 2016 hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels to cover up an alleged affair. He could also be indicted in Georgia, where he's alleged to have interfered with the 2020 election results, or in federal investigations over the transfer of power and his role during the January 6th, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol and on the mishandling of classified documents found at his home in Florida. Here's my question, and this gets at what you were saying, Nancy. Does any of this actually hinder his 2024 presidential campaign, or might it help it?
I am working on a book. The simple title of the book is Do Scandals Matter? And the reason that I ask the question is because there's a real, I think, risk in the political system today that these scandals no longer affect people the way they used to. There are a lot of reasons for this. I mean, partisanship is one, clearly, right? We're in a world where, you know, your grievances against the other party matter more than the kind of negativity that affects your own party. Misinformation is part of it. People choose the kind of information that they get, and so they often choose a news diet that's much more slanted towards the things that they like. So these things are combining to reduce the kind of accountability that we see as important in the political system, where we can challenge people who've done wrong and have that sanction work. So in a nutshell, scandals don't matter like they used to. The data do show that there's some variation on this depending on the level of political environment. But certainly for President Trump, the fact that he can get more eyeballs because of this definitely gives him an edge over his opponents, which is strange, but that's the world we live in.
You may want to consider another chapter in there, which has to do with the concept of shame.
Yes.
Our political system for so long was built on the unwritten rule that someone suffering a variety of scandals at a certain point becomes shamed into leaving public life. We've seen that play out many, many times before.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing it in this case. And there's something to be said for why that is.
I think that's right. And there's such low trust in government now and low trust in media that people no longer kind of assess the kind of things politicians do in the same way. So I think you're right that politicians are smart to kind of lean into this notion that they can kind of get away with things that they wouldn't be able to get away with before.
Well, I think if he is actually found guilty of any of these, it would affect his primary opportunity, especially with Ron DeSantis in the wings. And there are a lot of senators that may not want to share the ticket with an indicted presidential nominee, you know. So the 2016 chants of lock her up related to Hillary keep ringing in my ears. But, you know, also I was thinking about, I know this is a bit dated, but in 1980, Jimmy Carter said he lusted in his soul for other women, and we thought that was scandalous.
our definition of scandal has certainly changed.
Context matters, because for Carter, you know, he ran a kind of campaign that was designed to be a kind of squeaky clean, you know, reform-minded campaign. And so for him, the fact that this happened made it seem like he was, you know, kind of, you know, running against his own ability. But for former President Donald Trump, we're kind of used to it, right? He likes that pugnacious style, and the base likes it too. So I don't know what'll happen here. I think Nancy's right that eventually it'll hurt him, certainly in fundraising, like the data show that. But the fact that, you know, he is sort of seen as this, you know, pugilist really does excite his voters, and that's where a lot of the Republican Party is.
The former president, meantime, will hold a rally this Saturday in Waco. Why?
Well, it's, you know, Waco. And also there's a new Koresh documentary where we had one of the worst battles between government and private citizens. So I think that he's chosen Waco because it often evokes, to a new generation, it evokes HGTV. But to but to anybody older than that, it evokes the siege in Waco. And that's why he's holding it there.
Yeah, there's a great book by Jeff Gwynn, which details this in grave detail and is stunning in how it set up the kind of civil unrest that now seems to permeate the rest of the political world. So there are no coincidences in politics. I think the fact that he's doing this suggests that there's definitely a subtext that he would like to see this kind of revolutionary change. We've already seen him incite this on January 6th. So it's not uncommon, I think, that the president, former president, would do this. But also, I think he needs to defend Texas. You know, Ron DeSantis was here a few weeks ago. Although DeSantis's numbers were strong in Texas, once Trump began to attack him, the numbers went back down and Trump's numbers went back up. So I think Trump definitely wants to stay in the good graces of the Lone Star State.
You mentioned Jeff Gwynn, who's been on Houston Matters recently. He will be on Town Square today at 3 o'clock here on News 88.7. Gwynn, again, writing that book, Waco. He will discuss David Koresh, the Branch Davidians, and new information that's been uncovered in the 30 years since the botched siege what happened in that Branch Davidian complex outside Waco. Town Square's Ernie Manous will also talk with Tiller Russell, who is director of that new Netflix docuseries, Waco, American Apocalypse. So that's today at 3 o'clock on News 88.7, and I thank you both for helping to promote that completely unwittingly. While former President Trump has not yet been indicted for anything, Russian President Vladimir Putin has. The International Criminal Court, a few days back, issued an arrest warrant accusing Putin of war crimes in Ukraine. What specifically?
This has been a long time coming. There are several incidents that have been reported by international agencies that are disturbing and that potentially violate some of these treaties. And so it's definitely going to be, I think, a political moment for the Biden administration. They're struggling a little bit to try to get traction, or rather keep traction, on their ability to get Congress to help to support that effort. So they need every money, they mean every dollar, they need every vote. And so this probably keeps that afloat, at least for a little bit.
But meanwhile, Putin was dancing on stage with President Xi Jinping and you know, getting military support from China. So Putin has a little bit of that Trump Teflon, I would say, in his own world.
Is it also just safe to say Putin will simply ignore this warrant and just not travel anywhere where it could be enforced?
That's why the president of China came to him.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of attention in the political world and really among all of us on what the Federal Reserve decides to do this afternoon on interest rates. Most expect a 0.25% hike to address continuing concerns about inflation. That is less than conventional wisdom suggested about a week ago, but also more than what some suggest may be best for the banking system after those two regional bank failures and ripple effects from them. We'd like to think such policy decisions are tied solely to what's best for our economy and not the political winds, but are there political calculations made when it comes to this sort of thing?
There definitely are. And, you know, we've seen the Republicans who kind of caucused in Maryland to outline their legislative strategy, talk about some reforms to banking and basically re-upping their desire to have a kind of cap on borrowing. So there are these sort of political winds that are flowing around and definitely something that obviously the Biden administration is a little bit worried about. I mean, economic matters are going to be core to the 2024 question. So whether, you know, Biden runs or not, I guess we're not totally sure. He's implied he will, but I think there's some hesitation on whether or not he should. And so that's going to be definitely something that they're watching.
Yeah, I think the interest rate hikes are of grave concern to the public. Anybody with credit card debt or hoping to buy a home or anything is concerned about them. And so they become an issue politically in the reelection campaign for Biden if he seeks reelection. It's interesting that both parties have presidential potential nominees they don't really want. but I think it's a highly political issue. And it's a direct impact on consumers that's felt versus some of the stuff that's a little like the Ukrainian war, as you're talking about. It's a little more esoteric for the daily voter.
We're just getting started with this week's political roundup today with party politics co-host Brandon Rodinghouse and his fellow University of Houston political analyst and lecturer Nancy Sims. Just ahead, we will return to national politics, but also focus on some more local and regional news. Stick around as Houston Matters continues. This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. We're in the midst of this week's political roundup today with party politics co-host and professor of political science Brandon Rodinghouse and his fellow University of Houston political analyst and lecturer Nancy Sims. Let's focus on some more local and regional developments. As we discussed earlier in the hour, the first of four public meetings about the state takeover of Houston ISD was held last night. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee attended and spoke. The TEA deputy commissioner spoke and mostly did not really answer questions or answered some very carefully prepared and, you know, considered questions. There are some who are preparing for this takeover. Others are vowing still to fight it. Assuming everything does play out as planned and the appointed board takes over June 1st, according to the TEA's timeline, what political challenges does that appointed board face? And does any of it really matter since the board will have the authority to do pretty much whatever it wants to do?
Well, I think the latter is true, Craig, that the board is there to fix. And it's not a popularity campaign. I mean, they don't have to run for re-election. They're going to be appointed by the governor and the commissioner, and they're there to get a job done. So I don't see that there's any concern. Now, as regards to the meeting, Brandon and I were laughing while we were listening to the earlier story. You know, have these people never attended an HISD meeting before? And that we were astonished at how large the crowd was for a public meeting of that nature.
Yeah, there are obviously a lot of people who are frustrated about this and have been for years. This has been going on for a while. But the fact that this is the biggest district in Texas and the fact that it's so high profile is definitely going to put a big spotlight on what the state does. And how they handle this will be really critical because it could set the model for how other branches of districts across the state are potentially taken over. There has been a theme politically, as you mentioned, in the last couple of years where the state has sought more control over what local governments do. And that ranges from, you know, whether or not you can ban plastic bags to now, you know, kind of taking over a major school district. So that is definitely something that the state is going to have to consider because there is a fear that this is going to be like a little laboratory for the kinds of political experiments that the state might want to do, like vouchers or privatization of various types of incentives. And so that's definitely a concern, I think. And so the state has to address these things, and how they do that will be the measure of success.
Last week, Texas Republican Congressman Chip Roy endorsed Florida Governor Ron DeSantis for the GOP nomination for president in 2024. Only one problem, DeSantis has not yet announced he's running. Does that matter, and does an endorsement like this matter?
I think it matters. It's a positive endorsement for DeSantis, who's making it clear that he plans to run, so just hasn't formally announced yet is all. He is clearly in the running for, you know, for the Republican nomination. So, but Chip Roy is kind of he's a flag bearer of his own kind. He's always a little bit independent from the party, and he'll swing various ways on that. So it wasn't surprising to me to see him come out and endorse him.
Brandon, yeah. What was he trying to signal?
I think certainly he implied very strongly it was time to move on. He suggested that the former president was sort of old news, was the past, the party needs to move to the future, which is his opinion is Ron DeSantis. There's no love lost between Chip Roy and former President Donald Trump, and it showed pretty clearly. But Nancy's right. You know, Chip Roy has always been a bit of a bomb thrower. It also, I think, to some degree, kind of implies that the Freedom Caucus is willing to make these independent type decisions. I mean, they were tied closely to Trump because politically it was expedient. But realistically, that's not probably going to get them where they want to go. So they were able to kind of stake out their own territory. And that was effective in terms of bargaining with the incoming speaker and now potentially at the presidential level. So it's probably wise for him to be able to maneuver into this new ground.
The one to watch in this situation is Ted Cruz, who will be sharing the top of the ballot, you know, with the presidential nominee. So does he stand on stage next to Trump or does he stay out of it? Or, you know, where does he fall as he runs for reelection?
GOP activist and donor Stephen Hotze was kicked out of a Texas Senate State Affairs Committee hearing last week as it heard testimony over four bills targeting transgender people. Why was he kicked out? What happened?
Well, it's not nice to swear, and it's against the rules to swear, which is what he did. So technically, that's the reason he was kicked out. The broader discussion here is that this was a discussion about the role of people who are transgender and what the legislation in the state might do to be able to prevent them from transitioning. That has been a hot button political issue. It's certainly something that we're going to see more of in the next few weeks. Obviously, Dr. Hotze is one who is very conservative on this issue, and one of the Democratic senators called him out on his use of a particular kind of language and then specifically swearing. So this is really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of how the politics are going to play out.
But it was the Republican committee chair that had him removed.
Yeah.
So I think that's important, even though most of them support the legislation. He did have him removed. His behavior was that bad.
Yeah. Does bad behavior like that in a context like a committee hearing give some lawmakers pause about who it is they're getting in bed with when they support some of these bills?
Yes, I think so. I think that they would prefer there's a lot of hyperbole around this particular issue, and everybody's okay with the bulk of it. Not everybody, of course. People who support the transgender community and the LGBT community are not okay with it. But that he went too far. And when you go too far, it makes their challenge even harder. And so to remove him, to take him out of that hearing. But by the way, this is not new for Stephen Hotze. I mean, he's speaking of criminal charges. He's still facing some here in Harris County for chasing down some, you know, hiring a guy to chase down someone he thought had stolen ballots. And the guy was like your basic HVAC contractor. So, you know, not new.
Okay, back to Washington, D.C. The cast of Ted Lasso was at the White House this week to discuss mental health with President Biden. While the popular Apple TV Plus series is on its surface about a U.S. football coach moving to London to coach a Premier League team, mental health is very much at the heart of the show. So there is some logic to the visit. However, we saw what might be considered some unhealthy emotional behavior during their brief visit with the White House press corps. You want to talk about this scene, Brandon?
It is a strange scene all around. I think that the White House is smart in their use of celebrities to strategically make a point. A particular member of the press corps asked a question that was, considered to be a little harsh, out of bounds.
This is Today News Africa reporter Simon Atiba, who has consistently interrupted the White House press briefings, and not just the person holding those briefings, but often shouting over other reporters in the press corps and not allowing them to ask their questions.
Yeah, and I think it actually underscores the need to have a focus on mental health. And that was the reason that the cast was there. So we're in a political world where things are so vicious and things seem so ugly. And that's a good reminder that, you know, making sure we're mentally okay is important. So I think that's the message. And maybe, you know, this reporter asking this question and talking over people was a good reminder of why.
An unintentional reinforcement of the theme of that particular briefing.
That reporter tends to be angry all the time. So, you know, it is relative to the discussion.
Former U.S. Senator and longtime SNL alum Al Franken is guest hosting The Daily Show this week. Have you seen any of his efforts so far?
I haven't caught it.
I haven't, but Al Franken is a comedic genius, right? And speaking of how scandals don't last, this is a good example of that, right? He, in fact, left office because of a scandal involving some folks in his office and his behavior. So it's probably pretty telling that this is a kind of redemption tour in a way.
He was, at the time, shamed into resigning. Once again, I suggest a chapter in your forthcoming book about shame.
There you go.
He did interview Senator Lindsey Graham as part of it, and that's an interesting combination. The two of them, it would appear outwardly, and this was one of the comments that a lot of folks had about Frankenstein in the Senate, was that he got along with everybody, even people he viscerally disagreed with, and the two of them were often at odds. They seemed relatively cordial. It was a little awkward times, but, you know. It's
politics, right?
It's politics.
I mean, remember one of his books is titled Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. So certainly it's the case that there's going to be friction.
The full title was Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations. So let's be fair.
Right. True enough. I think you have to have thick skin in Washington, and they do. And so I think a little friction is going to be par for the course, but they have to learn how to work together. And it seems like they have, and I think that's a good sort of resonance in terms of messaging.
Well, and I would call it grudging respect, right? It's like we disagree, but we respect each other's place in your zone.
And that alone is a sign of decency we very often do not see in politics.
Anymore.
Brandon, what's on Party Politics this week?
Well, this week, one of the things, in addition to talking about HISD takeover and some of the Trump shenanigans, is that we're going to talk about the RNCC, the Republican arm of the congressional campaign, targeting some races in South Texas. This has been heavily disputed political ground. Republicans want to make additional inroads. Democrats are hoping to sort of keep it. If the Democrats have any chance of holding the line politically, they've got to win in South Texas. But Republicans know that they can make some persuasive arguments for voters there. So that's going to be a kind of real, I think, fight, and maybe the only fight we see of relevance in Texas in 2024.
You can catch Brandon and his co-host Geronimo Cortina on this week's Party Politics Friday night at 7:30 on News 88.7 or Friday night at 8 on TV 8. You can also subscribe to the Party Politics podcast and listen at your leisure. Brandon Roddinghouse is also a political science professor at the University of Houston, where Nancy Sims is a political analyst and lecturer in the Department of Political Science. Thank you both very much.
Thanks,
Greg.
Thank you.